is against me.
This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
Jesus, in a way that the Jews are going to understand, functional thinking. This is what he does. But his Greek audience, form thinking. He's giving them this image, the door, the shepherd, the way, the truth, the life, the resurrection. You know, I mean, these are great images. Yeah. And if we understand how Jews and Greeks think, then these images, I think, really come alive. They really come alive, okay? Now, another distinct difference in these two cultures, Jewish culture and Greco-Roman culture, is what I call and what my friend Randy Smith has often referred to as acceptance and obedience versus speculation and application. You see, the rabbis taught that it was the duty of God's people to accept the revelation that God has given them and then simply obey. They saw the pillar of fire and smoke on Mount Sinai. It was God. As to what was above that pillar of smoke, they not only did they not know, but they didn't feel they had the right to even speculate what was going on above that pillar of fire. They didn't have the right to speculate on God and his attributes and who he was. To the Jewish mind, God tells us what we should do. We obey. It's that simple. But Greeks are different. They have a thing called logic in their culture. And even today, Greek culture is that way. Remember, these are the inventors of geometry, right? Mm. If we know
where does that pillar begin? Where does it end?
Greek thinkers believe that if they know some things about God, they can apply their logic and figure out the rest. You see the difference between the two? Jews said, we receive God's revelation, we obey. The Greeks go, well, we see this a little bit about God, we can figure out the rest of him. All right? So when Greek-thinking people came into the church in large numbers in the second century, theology was born. This is the speculation of who God is, what he's really saying, and how we are to respond at this point in time. Jews never really developed a theology of God. They didn't feel they had the right to do that. But what you see in early church history, especially through the 3rd and the 6th century, we see councils, we see schisms, we see excommunications, because applying logic to God often had disastrous results, okay? When Constantine called all the bishops together and the at Nicaea in the 4th century, there were many survivors of the persecution under the last Roman emperor in the, I think it was 280 to 290 Domitian, severe persecution. And many of those that survived that were present at, and they were having dinner with the emperor. And it was said that during that dinner that Constantine actually went over to one of those bishops who had lost his eye in that persecution through torture and actually leaned over and kissed him on where the face where that eye used to be. I mean, these bishops couldn't believe that, you know, years before the emperor was after them and killing them, and now they're having dinner with the emperor. They began their meetings at this council with as trying to establish official church doctrines, but they couldn't agree, and many of them wanted to excommunicate one another. Because they all agreed that the scriptures were inerrant, but many believed inerrancy applied only to their logical interpretation of the scriptures. And finally, Constantine had to force them to come to some agreement because this was the result of their speculation and their application. This is my friend Randy Smith calls it, this is the time when the church went through the Greek car wash and everything changed. There was an effort on some of the Christians from Alexandria to move away from their Jewish roots during this time to a more philosophy approach to the Bible. And this is where the Hebrew scriptures began to be viewed as allegories. And there was one bishop named Marcion that really eliminated all the Hebrew books in the Bible that had any in the Christian scriptures, any of the quotes of the Jewish prophets, he eliminated that. And finally, Marcion was left with a Bible that only contained the letters of Paul and some of Luke's gospel. And this eventually got carried on into 18th and 19th century theology in some German schools. So there's a difference between acceptance and obedience and speculation and application. This is how the church changed its character. There's a third distinction called tribal mentality versus individual thinking. See, Jews were in an environment where they understood the collective, the good of the many over the individual, the good of the one. They thought of themselves first as family members, then as members of their extended clan, then members of the 12 tribes, then members of the nation of Israel.
So they survived by being tribal.
Right. They're very tribal. And so, for example, the mentality was what was best for the group is what's best for me.
Moish, you're going to make the shoes. I'm going to open up the jewelry store.
Well, thus the king could offer tax exemption to the families of the sappers. Remember, those were the guys that crawled under the walls of the cities of the enemies, and they used
sacrificing
picks.
Their very own lives.
They used picks to try to knock the sewer pipes down to get the walls collapsed, and they probably were going to die in this mission, but they knew that their families were going to live tax-free for the rest of their lives. Now, imagine you and I lived tax-free. Imagine you and I lived tax-free for the rest of our lives. That would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I still wouldn't want my family member to die for it.
But this was their mentality.
Yeah.
This was what's good for my family is good for me. Okay? But Greeks are very different. They're individual thinkers. Remember, their dramas and their literature often portrayed the lone hero who overcame great odds or fell prey to the schemes of the gods or his own failings. The importance of the individual in Greek culture gave rise to a unique form of government, democracy, right? Where individuals had the right to be the rulers of the city. And these concepts, democratic concepts, didn't really apply to Jewish culture.
Mm.
Okay? So a theme of Paul's letters as he's talking to his Greek-thinking friends, he talks a lot about the concept of the body of Christ. Have you noticed that in his epistles? Mm-hmm. That we're all parts of a body. We each have a function to play.
Some of the hands, some of the legs, some of the brain, some of the nose.
He didn't have to tell this to his Jewish friends. He's telling it to his Greek and Romans friends.
Yeah, they get it. They survived by having a syndication.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he writes to his friends in Ephesus, under his direction, the whole body is fitted together perfectly. Each part does his own special work. It helps the other parts to grow, so the whole body is healthy and growing more and full of love. You see, Paul knew that this collective tribal idea was very a foreign concept to the Greek-thinking Christians. And for us, Gret, think about it. It's also a concept for us Western-thinking Christians, right? Because we often think of individuals. Think of our own culture. The heroes of our culture are rugged individualists. The Marlboro Man, right? Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, guys that can go and just do it all on their own. But if we look at the Bible, we have a completely different picture, that we're part of a community, we're part of a body. And there is a reason, Rhett, that you see these verses that begin with or end with one another. There's 21 of those in the Bible, that how we should love one another, forgive one another, serve one another, confess our sins to one another. All these one another's, this is tribal body commandments.
Well, even Jesus said on that day, many will come to me saying they did this, they did that, as I never knew you, but to you come in. Well, you fed me when I was hungry, clothed me when I was naked, and visited me in prison. And they will say, we don't remember you, Jesus. Who were you? When you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Come in, for your reward is great. Now, to me, that says he's relational, but it also is tribal, that Paul said, esteem others greater than self.
Well, right. This is
It's taken me a lifetime to learn my joy is when I'm giving more than I'm taking. That's when I'm happiest as a person.
Right. This is a biblical concept that often is very different than the way we Greek-thinking Westerners have grown up. You know, that
I've got to accumulate.
So, you know, I mean, literally the Bible, the main theme of the Bible is other-centeredness, right?
Yes.
Yet we grew up in a world where we're told, look out for number one.
Yeah.
And we have the right to make our own decisions and do what we want to do. But the idea of being part of a community, especially in our culture right now, we're seeing that that's a difficult concept to do not what's best for you, but what's best for my community. And if we actually embrace that, many of the situations in our Western culture would really disappear. So then there's a another concept here that
I just want to say one thing on the side. So this is maybe this is only Rhett Palmer's perception, but a lot of I'm surprised with conservative Jews, though a lot of them are more democratic. Well, that would go in alignment with this because they believe safety is in the socialization, and that everybody has their position. So, though I've accumulated a lot, I don't mind if you tax me, but that can lead into a dangerous place if you get to a place of communism or, you know, just I'm just thinking politically why so many Jews tend to be, at least in the past, have remained democratic, and yet even though they're persecuted, you know?
That might be changing, but I think the basis is the culture is one of let's stick together and do what's best for the our culture. And it really plays out. I mean, go to any kibbutz in Israel, you know.
And I've been there, and you have probably multiple times.
And, you know, it's everybody's working and sharing.
It's a commune.
It's right.
As in communist, it is, right?
Yeah, but it's, yeah, it's a collective effort. And I think the tribal thinking helps us be that way. You know?
Why didn't it work with the pilgrims when they first landed the first year? Pat Robertson said they all tried to work together, and then you know you've got Henry and the wife saying, Henry, you've tilled the land more than Billy over there, Billy Foster. So you just stop tilling. Well, supposedly they almost starved to death that first year, and then they divided the land up to private ownership. And so individualism succeeded. Why did this collectiveness work with the Jews but not with the pilgrims?
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for New Day with Rhett Palmer.
We'd like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting. It's a new day.
Terrors that stalk in the night. Fear not the sound or the heat of the battle. Fear not the flame of the fight. For there is a refuge, a tower of strength, a fortress for all who will call on the name El Shaddai. El Shaddai, our mighty sustainer, the God who provides Elohai, Lord of life, the one who delivers, a faithful defender, a shelter for all who abide in the shadow of El Shaddai. And the sun will set still, the rivers will turn to dry land, a pillar of fire.